Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome to Homeschool Companion. Today we have a personal interest story, and we're going to be interviewing Stephen Abadi. Stephen and Marianne Abadi experienced what no parent should ever have to experience, and that is the death of a child. Their child, Luke Abadi, was a promising young athlete, and he was killed in a car crash just days before his 16th birthday. This loss left them grief-stricken. Fueled by faith in their deep family bond, the Abadis try to rebuild their lives without Luke. And this is a story told in the movie called The Fifth Quarter. It tells of the emotional and inspirational family that works through the gift of life in a football game. After Luke is killed, his older brother John almost ends his own college football career, but instead decides to honor his brother's memory and continue playing. This will be a very interesting interview, but before we go to this interview, kids, we want to have our story time with you. So we're going to pick up where we left off in Bickey's Cow College.
Well, we left off just after we started Chapter 9 when the threshing crews had come through the Halls neighborhood. And I always ask Dr. Gamblin to read a little bit from where we left off so that we're overlapping so you can hear
how
it started.
The threshing crews that worked the Halls neighborhood that fall were in trouble. It had been a dry season, and there was not enough water for the 8 teams of horses they needed to pull their rig. There was a water famine in all of Story County. Little rain had fallen that spring, and the snows had been light the previous winter. Most of the streams and some of the wells were dry. But the new well that Alan Hall had sunk into his herding ground yielded a full flow of pure, cold water, enough for his herd of 40 cows and more. Alan Hall gave the owner of the threshing rig permission to take 2 tank loads of water a week, one on Tuesdays and one on Thursdays. Now Bickey had to make sure his herd was watered and that he had a full tank in reserve before the tank wagon came. On the first Tuesday, when the tank wagon drove up to the well, Bickey had just finished pumping the big water tank full. He saw that the driver was Hod Stone. Bickey slipped away from the well and back to his herd. He didn't want any trouble with Hod. That evening, Uncle Alan told Bickey that Hod had been hired to drive the water tank wagon, and he would be coming regularly for the water. The next morning, Bickey explained this to Jim.
"Now, Jim,"
Bickey told his friend,
"I'd like you to be down here the day Hod comes for water. You know he isn't apt to pick a fight if we're together." "I don't think Hod wants any more fights with you, Bickey,"
Jim said with a chuckle.
"I can't imagine him wanting his thumb chewed again." "Just the same, whenever you see the tank wagon heading this way to get water, I wish you'd run down here as fast as you can."
On Thursday, Jim came down early, and the boys talked about many things. They talked about the jackknife Bickey had found on the corral gate.
"I didn't put it there,"
Jim said.
"I never saw that knife before. It looks brand new. Where could it have come from?"
Bickey held the shiny knife in his hands and studied it.
"Someone must have hung it there." "Well, I'll tell you what I think. Uncle Alan probably got it as a surprise for you, and he had Bill run down here and hang it on the gate." "Do you think he'd have done that? Wouldn't he be more likely to put it on my bed or at my plate at the table?" "Oh, Bickey, we don't know where it came from, but it's a fine knife, and now we can play mumblety-peg."
The cows were restless, so there was no time for any games, and the boys talked about what had happened to the missing things on Zeke Lager's wagon.
"I'm sure Hod took them,"
Jim said.
"Who else would have found them?" "Yes, I suppose he did. I wish I'd seen Zeke Lager when he came after the wagon. Seems as though he would have said something to some of us. You don't suppose he thinks we took them, do you?" "No, of course not. He knows Hod."
The afternoon was sultry, and the hazy clouds began to pile up on the horizon. When Hod drove up to the well with the five big beautiful horses hitched to the heavy tank wagon, both Jim and Bicky watched him from a safe distance. Even as they watched, clouds scuttled across the sky and darkened it. Hod lifted the big hose, which was to be pushed down into the well to pump up the water from the tank. Before he could open the well and thrust down the hose, a sharp flash of lightning cut the sky and thunder split the air. The angry clouds overhead whirled and whipped back and forth, and the chilly wind dashed rain into the boys' faces. Now lightning zigzagged all over the heavens and the roll of thunder crashed about them. They saw Hod drop the hose and leap into the air like a startled rabbit. Then he tore off up the hill toward the Nelson orchard like the lightning that he was trying to escape from. Then hail began to pelt down, and the sharp ice pellets fell mercilessly on the horse's back.
"Watch the cows!"
Bicky yelled to Jim, and he saw him run to the herd, which had gathered into a tight mass. It took all Bicky's strength and speed to catch on to the back of the careening tank wagon and hoist himself up. By the time he had climbed forward to the driver's seat, the horses were leaping in wild flight across the meadow, and you can see a picture here of it. It's quite scary. The reins were wound around the whipstock just where Hod had left them. With flashing fingers, Bicky loosened them. Bicky loved and understood horses, and he had driven horses ever since he could hold the reins. He knew he could not hope to stop these horses. He knew how the hailstones frightened and hurt them. He drove with the storm, guiding them to the angling road south of the corral. He could run no corners and run into no fences. Bicky knew where not to go. While the hailstones goaded the horses to madness, they also struck at Bicky, stabbing through his thin work shirt. Little by little, he tightened the reins, and by the time the sudden storm had passed, he had the horses under control. The clouds rolled away, blue sky appeared, and the wind died down to a warm breeze, and the sun came out again. Bicky turned the horses around and drove back along the angling road to the herding ground. He saw the cows grazing peacefully, with Jim walking back and forth among them.
"Isn't this a lark?"
Bicky sang out to Jim as he drove the heavy wagon toward the Nelson farm. Where were the threshers working? They had finished in the Nelson's Westfield. Where were the owners of the wagon and the horses? Where was Hod? A group of men were gathered at the Nelson's barn when Bicky drove up.
"Well, thank God,"
one of the men said as he came forward to take the horses.
"What are you doing with these horses in the tank wagon?"
Uncle Allen took his arm as he got down from the wagon. Bicky began to explain. Then he saw a stranger in the group of men. No, it wasn't a stranger. It was Sam Drake, the man who had been his teacher in the second grade. Sam Drake came forward, and no father could have embraced his son with more tenderness.
Bicky Ross, how good it is to see you. The same old Bic, but a lot bigger and browner. They told me you were herding cattle this summer, but this looks more like horse herding to me.
Now all the men gathered around. Where was Hod? That was the question in everyone's mouth. As the facts of his absence and his desertion of the horses and wagon was revealed, men expressed various opinions. Traitor, coward, idiot, pup, and other similar names were applied to the absent Hod. Bicky stood close to Sam Drake.
How do you happen to be here today?
He asked.
Well, Bicky, I was in State Center yesterday, and I saw your mother at the store. She told me you were out here at Allen Hall's place, and she wanted me to find out how you're getting along. She knew I'd be coming around to see Allen and Mary.
Did you see Tommy?
No, not yesterday. Your mother said Tommy was swimming with some of his friends. Well, that's nice for Tommy.
Bicky remembered that he would be with his herd of cows until frost. Not much swimming after frost, and we're going to stop there today. But we hope you'll look forward to hearing us again next week, reading this classic story called Bicky's Cow College. Now we're going to pick up with our interview of Stephen Abadi. Welcome, Stephen. Now, we're talking about an experience that no parent should ever have to experience, and I don't... do you feel comfortable sharing that experience?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So tell us about that day.
You know, it was a typical Monday for us, and Luke went to school that early morning. He had forgotten his jersey, so my conference call was canceled, and I actually got to go to school and gave him his jersey and gave him a hug and a kiss and went through school and had practice that evening for lacrosse. And we were at home, you know, had dinner ready, waiting for him to call. Usually he would call and we'd go pick him up. I mean, the school was right down the block, basically. That day, for some reason, he chose to get in a car with four other kids who lived near our neighborhood and accepted a ride home. And the driver, rather than taking the kids home, wanted to scare the kids in the back seat. They were underclassmen, and went down a road that was hilly, and going about 95 miles an hour, lost control of the car, and went down a 70-foot embankment, and the car rolled a number of times. And a lot of the Luke was in the rear right seat in the back, and a lot of the trauma was in that area, so he was very affected by it with a head trauma. And so it was around 6:30 that evening we got a call that there had been an accident, and that's how the day ended.
That tragedy no parent should ever have to experience. This loss leaves this close-knit family devastated. Now, how do you begin to pick up the pieces? Tell me about the other children in the family and your wife.
Sure. You know, I think picking up the pieces is a daily thing. You know, 5 years later, we're still struggling, and every day, each one of us in the family, have grieved differently over the years, and some days are darker than others. I don't think it's something that you ever get over. Your life is completely changed. But during Luke's funeral, one of his pastors, who also is a coach, Luke was number 5 in high school football, and he said, let's honor Luke at the high school games by raising our hand at the beginning of the fourth quarter, 5 fingers high to honor Luke. And so John was due to go back to Wake Forest University his last year of football there. He's been a linebacker, and he was devastated. At one point, he decided not to go back and play, and we encouraged him that, Luke would want that.
Yeah.
It's a good way to honor your brother. So he went back to school and asked his coach, Coach Grobe, if he could change his number from 40, which is a typical linebacker number, to number 5, which is not so typical, for a linebacker. And, the school had no hesitation. They said yes. And so the very first home game, we didn't realize, but for 4 years, we sat in Section 5 and watched Wake Forest play football. And so at the beginning of the fourth quarter, John, his mom, and I, and Adam, John's brother, and his sister, we all raised our fingers 5 to each other to honor Luke. And then the next game happened to be at home as well. The whole stands did it,
oh,
and the teams
wow.
did it. And, by the third game, it made national attention, and mm-hmm. it was in the front page of the USA Today, how, this college football team was honoring one of their players' brothers. And it became known as really the secret weapon for Wake Forest. Though John and the kids were doing all the work, we felt like Luke was kind of there giving them inspiration. That year, Wake was picked to come in last in the ACC. And they won 10 of the 11 games. And they would go into the fourth quarter losing and win in the fourth quarter, which, of course, we call the fifth quarter, Luke's quarter.
Yeah.
And so, that's how we felt like it was a good way to honor Luke. And I think John was inspired by his brother, who in turn inspired his teammates to be the best they can be. And they all had something they were playing for. And, Wake Forest just came out on top and went to the ACC championship game, which they should never have been there, and won against Georgia Tech to a score of, total score of 15. So the number 5 seemed to be threaded through the whole process. When Luke was in the hospital, we realized, within the first 24 hours that he was not going to, come back to us. Mm-hmm. And the doctors declared him that he was, brain dead. And we had some tough decisions to make as a family, and we struggled with that. And we did decide that Luke would want to donate his organs. He had marked on his learner's permit that he wanted to be an organ donator. And my wife, Marianne, remembers the day they went to get his permit, and he asked her what that meant. And she explained it to him, and he said, yeah, of course, with no hesitation.
Oh, wow.
So, hindsight, again, 5 people received his organs. A woman in Baltimore received his heart. Luke was an AB negative blood type, so very rare. And she was 21. She had during her second pregnancy, developed myocardiopathy, which is a heart-related pregnancy disease. Went in the hospital on New Year's Eve of 2005 and was not doing well, and really was at the tail end of her disease process until she received Luke's heart on February the 15th.
Wow, that is fabulous. You know, I think every family or every set of parents dreads the possibility, and it hangs over our heads. Mm-hmm. How do you cope with that on a spiritual level?
You know, we were our family was you know, we raised our kids in faith, and we have a daughter, Rachel, who's 27, Adam's twin, who was born premature and has cerebral palsy, and we struggled early on in our family and our marriage with that, and till we all found you know, a home at a church who really helped us through that. And I think that, you know, when tragedy hits like ours did, it's normal to be angry. And, you know, I was angry at God. I still believed in Him, but I was angry. And I think for each of us, it's a daily walk. I certainly think without our faith, our family would not be where it is today. I mean, we're still a very close-knit family. We all struggle in different ways, but I think the basis and the web that keeps us together is God and our faith in Him.
Now, your story continues to bless others, and I'm holding in front of me the title of a film, but what was it, a book first? Tell me the progression leading to this.
Well, you know, it's a movie first, and hopefully the book will come later. I think my wife's in the process of writing it right now. But during the ACC game and the Orange Bowl game where they played against Louisville, Wake Forest, ESPN and Fox did a special on her family and about John and the Wake Forest, you know, football team and how they had come from last to first, you know, in the championship game. And Rick Bieber, who produced several movies and lived out in California, happened to see the Fox special before the Orange Bowl game and reached out and contacted us and said, you know, I'm very sorry for your loss, and you know what a wonderful thing has happened, you know, in this past year. I think this would be a great sports inspirational movie, and we were kind of taken back by it. But the more we thought about it, we thought, wow, what another way to honor Luke and to spread, you know, not only what he gave in life, but what he gave in his passing, and how he touched so many, you know, during his years of life and then afterwards. So we agreed, and Rick came to our house, met with us over several weeks, interviewed us, and we agreed that we would allow him to write a script, and that's as far as that we would take it until we saw the script. And you know, about a year later he came back to us and said, here's my script. And we read it and read it again and read it a third time, and it was amazing how Rick portrayed in this script what actually happened. The movie is 99% true. It's our words coming out of the actor's mouth, and that's what we were impressed upon, was the accuracy of what we had been through and where we had come from and where we were today. And so when we read it, we said, yeah, let's go forward. And we, you know, entered another agreement that he would go out and try to find financing in the actors. And, you know, here we are today, 5 years later. The movie comes out on March 25th. You know, Luke's passing was February 15th. So, you know, I told Rick, I said, I think Luke had that in the plans in the very beginning, that he was going to make you wait 5 years before you got to, actually have the release of the movie. It's not a coincidence.
So the movie is the fifth quarter.
It is. It's number five.
And what actor plays you?
Aidan Quinn. Plays myself, and very honored to have that happen.
Yeah, that's pretty. Yeah. That's bigger than life.
Bigger than life, and you know, had watched him in several movies and always admired him, and then here he was, you know, actually portraying me in this movie.
Yes. Now, do you know who plays the other characters?
Sure, Annie McDowell, who you probably know from Groundhog Day and other movies, plays my wife's character, and then Ryan Merriman, who played in Final Destination 3, kind of grew up in the Disney movies, plays John, and there's a number of other, you know, well-known actors who play the other characters as well.
I think of many Christian families who are looking for good, wholesome things for their children to watch. Mm-hmm. Can you 100% endorse this movie?
I can. It is a movie about a Christian family who who is very close-knit and very loving, very solid in their faith, how they react to tragedies. And I will say that at the beginning of the movie, there's some very dark days. But it really talks about how when you walk in faith, God will help heal you. But it is a daily struggle. And I think the movie will not only talk about that, but really look to kids to be responsible when they have passengers in their car.
Yes.
Because what happened to Luke should have never happened. It wasn't an accident. It was a purposeful act of selfishness.
Now, the person who was driving, what has been the story of their...
Well, after the accident, I think he and his parents knew that this was not a good thing and that he was in trouble. And they hired lawyers, and we've really never spoken to them since that very initial contact in the hospital. We didn't know the family, so we've had no interaction with them. You know, the driver was convicted of several first-degree felonies, though he was a week shy of his 17th birthday. Even though the state tried to pursue it in adult court, he was really charged in juvenile court. And unfortunately, for what he did, he received 2 months in juvenile jail and 5 years probation of his driver's license. Mm. Yeah. So we don't really focus on him at all.
Yeah, there's really no justice. Well, as we conclude this interview, I can't help but feel inspired by what you've talked about today. And I wondered if there's a favorite text that your family hung on to through this dark time, or a favorite way of praying together, or something that tended to just help you ride the waves of this tragedy.
You know, I think what we as a family held on to was just the love of God, and that really since that time, there's not a minute or a day that goes by that I don't cherish each moment of conversation, face-to-face visits, you know, with my kids and, of course, my wife, because you never know when that's going to be the last one.
That's right.
I never realized that day when I brought Lucas jersey that that'd be the last time I hugged him and told him I loved him, and him telling me he loved me. And so.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you so much for spending this time with our listeners. Now, there's probably going to be a website that they could go and see it.
There is a website. It's thefifthquartermovie.com. It's the number 5thmovie.com. And there's also a website for our foundation, which is the Luke Abadi fifthquarterfoundation.org.
Fifth quarter, and we'll get all that information.
Sure.
I'll include it on my website as
well. And there's a link on the movie website to our website.
And it says that the film is working heavily with Donate Life. Is that a charitable organization?
It is the transplant organization across the country, and we hope that this movie will inspire others like Luke was inspired to mark on their driver's license that they want to be an organ donator. Again, 5 people received Luke's organs and today are still living, and we've actually been able to meet the woman who, Casey, who has Luke's heart. It
Fantastic.
Was a dream of ours. And after 4 years of working through the legal system and the HIPAA laws, we were able to fly to Baltimore, John Hopkins, and actually meet Casey. And, my desire was always to be able to feel Luke's heartbeat and hear it. And she allowed us to do that, because today he's really still alive in her. His heart beats every day and it's beating very strong.
Well, we are coming to the end of the show, and all my listeners know that I cry all the time anyway if it's sad. So I'd like to thank you so much
thank you.
For sharing. And we have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.